Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
While I'm not an advocate of spending money that you don't need to spend, we actually have it because oil prices are high, because there's a war. That's why people need the help.
State senators vote to give energy relief payments on top of permanent fund dividends. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, May 9th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, travelers adapt after a landslide blocks a road near Seward.
They have abandoned their rental car here, checked out, and then took the water taxi. They had to spend $400 to get from Seward to Anchorage.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If you are a hunter, birder, or outdoor enthusiast, the U.S. Geological Survey is asking for help tracking the bird populations in Alaska. The USGS manages a nationwide bird banding program, and every year, thousands of birds are marked with small, numbered leg bands. If you see, find, or harvest a banded bird, please report the band number online at reportband.gov. The information provided will help inform how bird populations may be changing. This message sponsored by the USGS Alaska Science Center.
Alaska's State Senate has voted to pay Alaskans $1,300 on top of their permanent fund dividends. But the total payment to Alaskans remains up in the air as of this afternoon as the Senate debates its version of the state budget. Republican Senator Mike Schauer of Wasilla said that the high price of oil means the state has money available.
While I'm not an advocate of spending money that you don't need to spend, I think the argument is right now we actually have it because oil prices are high, because there's a war. That's why people need the help.
Senator Tom Begich opposed the energy relief payments. The Anchorage Democrat said he was concerned the payment would mean less money would be available for a $1.2 billion plan to fund education a year in advance.
Based on how we've built the budget here in the Senate, it's clear that this money would then come at the expense of forward funding of education. And that's not an exchange I'm willing to make.
The amendment adding energy relief payments passed 12-7 on a bipartisan basis, with several members crossing caucus lines. The State House approved a similar energy relief payment when it passed its own $7.7 billion version of the state operating budget. The House's spending plan also includes a $1,300 permanent fund dividend for a total of $2,600 in payments to each Alaskan. Differences between the House and Senate's spending plans would be worked out in a conference committee before sending the budget to the governor. A massive landslide blocked the only road to the small community of Lowell Point outside of Seward on Saturday evening. The slide sent spruce trees and car-sized boulders tumbling down the mountain. It also left tourists with tough choices, business operators scrambling to accommodate, and it forced local Alaskans to figure out how to salvage their weekend getaways. Alaska Public Media's Lex Trinan has more.
Kip Wilkinson was excited to celebrate his 29th birthday at a bed and breakfast at Lowell Point. After a day of fishing, he drove from town in Seward to the cabin community a few miles south of town at around 7 p.m. on Saturday and started setting up for a party. He made it past the slide area just in time.
There are a couple boulders there that we drove past, and then about 30 minutes later, we got a call from our friends that said they weren't going to make it.
A massive landslide estimated at 300 feet across had blocked the narrow road, splitting the group in two. Wilkinson's friend, Josh Gray, recorded what happened.
Holy sh**.
Did you get that?
I'm getting it. That is f***ing crazy.
The video shows a police car and a small bulldozer already on the scene responding to the initial slide, speeding away as large spruce trees tumble down like dominoes towards Resurrection Bay. Other videos posted on social media show people who had just stepped out of their cars running down the road in panic away from the slide. Wilkinson says it left just four of them at the cabin to party.
We had such a good time. We had all the beer. We had all the fresh fish. The only thing we didn't have was tartar sauce.
They made the most of it, but 2 days later, two of their cars are still stuck on the far side of the slide. Wilkinson, who lives in Anchorage, says he expects to be biking to work for the next few weeks. He's not the only one affected. Dozens of visitors and a handful of full-time residents had their only land route to the highway system cut off, forcing them to rely on a $25 water taxi from the Seward Harbor. Officials estimate that 40 cars are stuck indefinitely behind the wall of debris. Business operators like Linda Paquette say clients adapted quickly. One couple visiting from out of state had to figure out a way to catch their flight the next day out of Anchorage.
They have abandoned their rental car here with Miller's and checked out and then took the water taxi. They had to spend $400 on PJ's taxi to get from Seward to Anchorage.
Paquette says some visitors who had stays booked for the next few days or weeks embraced the adventure of an extra water taxi ride, but others weren't so happy and demanded refunds. Paquette says having another obstacle for people to get there is just another blow for the business after three tough years, beginning with the large wildfires in 2019 and then the COVID-19 pandemic.
I'm feeling more tired than resilient at this point.
Responders are racing to clear the debris. City Clerk Brenda Ballou drove down to watch the efforts on Monday afternoon.
There's two excavators out there in the area right now that are, you know, moving earth, trying to create access, kind of gingerly creating some access point for additional equipment.
The city doesn't have an exact estimate for when the road clearing will be done. Scientists, meanwhile, are trying to figure out the cause. The slide came after a streak of bluebird days, not the usual weather pattern that precedes a landslide. Deanne Stevens is the chief of the state's engineering geology section.
The temperatures got very, very warm, and there's a lot of snow melt that's gone on. And some of the thinking right now is that that saturated the soil in that very, very steep slope, and that could have probably possibly been the reason for that slope to fail.
Unfortunately for business owners and recreators, landslides might happen more often in the coming decades. It's related to climate change, Stephen says.
It'll probably be a similar situation to what we're seeing over a lot of parts of Alaska, where landslides are likely to occur perhaps more frequently, largely again due to precipitation and warmer temperatures.
Stevens has been analyzing photos of the slide and talking to scientists on the ground and says there's no immediate threat of another large slide. If no new risks pop up and debris clearing goes smoothly, officials hope to have the road reopened in about 2 weeks. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Lex Trinan.
Manly Hot Springs was flooded over the weekend when an ice jam formed on the Tanana River downstream of the community. As KYC's Dan Bross reports, the jam released Sunday and water began receding, leaving behind damaged homes and infrastructure.
Manly Hot Springs is located on the Tanana River at the end of the Elliott Highway northwest of Fairbanks. It's a small community that looked even smaller viewed from the air, surrounded by the enormity of the flood that spread from an ice jam 12 miles downstream on the river. National Weather Service hydrologist Ed Plum flew over the area with the Civil Air Patrol as floodwaters rose Saturday.
You could see that approximately, just to make an estimate, maybe 90% or more of the community was inundated with water, you know, at varying depths. Most of the roads had water over them. Many structures and homes had water either around them or under them. And it was hard to tell from the air how many were impacted with water actually inside of the homes.
Our home is probably a total loss along with many other homes in Manly.
Manly resident Sabrina Yersha estimates that about 40 homes have been affected by the flood. She says there's damage from the water and even worse, fuel spills.
I think everybody in Manly Hot Springs purchased heating fuel before the costs went up, plus their summer's gas. And it stinks so bad like fuel. It is just a sheen across everywhere.
Yersha says a majority of the community's 80-plus residents evacuated to higher ground, and many are staying at the Manly Hot Springs Resort property.
They just called us and told us everybody just go up there and squeeze as many as you can into the cabins. And a few people brought campers. And then Pam Reddington opened up her home. And she has a couple other cabins that she opened up. And people with dogs, she opened up and let people put dogs in kennels.
Yersha says the evacuees are so far well supplied.
We're all great on the food and water department where we're staying up here at the resort. The owners just brought us a truckload of food.
As of Sunday, the community's power, phone lines, and cell service were down. The Tanana Chiefs Conference and the state have responded to Manly Hot Springs to provide assistance on several fronts. Governor Mike Dunleavy has declared a disaster for the area, and he visited the community with a food delivery on Sunday. Meanwhile, cooler temperatures and mixed rain and snow have moved into the broader region. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Alaska Native U.S. House candidates discuss rural issues in Bethel.
Public safety is intertwined with so many other issues. A lot of people remain in dangerous households because of Alaska's chronic housing shortages.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska Pacific University offers degree-seeking students the opportunity to receive donor-funded scholarships, grants, and other financial aid. Apply for admission to be automatically considered for most scholarships. Complete financial aid applications by priority deadlines to receive optimal consideration. Financial aid counselors are available to assist. Learn more at alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by Alaska Pacific University.
A former Alaska resident living in Utah has been charged with kidnapping and murdering a Homer woman who disappeared in 2019. Authorities arrested 32-year-old Kirby Calderwood in Ogden, Utah today, according to a statement from the Homer Police Department. The announcement is the first indication of what happened to Anisha Duffy Murnane since she went missing in October 2019. Homer police say they actively investigated the case since Murnane's disappearance, chasing down hundreds of tips. Murnane was 38 at the time and last seen in downtown Homer walking to an appointment that she never arrived at. Searchers on foot and on ATVs, as well as by air and a helicopter, were unable to find her. Based on tracks by search dogs, police said at the time it appeared someone in a vehicle had picked up Murnane. According to the Homer police statement, it was a recent tip that led to Calderwood's arrest. Homer police declined to comment but said the investigation remains open. Anyone with information relevant to the case, especially about Calderwood and his possible interactions with Murnane, is asked to call the Homer Police Department at 907-235-3150. A massive search is ongoing for a 7-year-old autistic boy who went missing near his home on Kodiak Island Saturday afternoon. KMXD's Kirsten Dobroth reports that hundreds of community volunteers and a dozen law enforcement agencies are part of the search effort.
Dozens of people gathered outside the Bayside Volunteer Fire Department just outside of Kodiak city limits on Sunday morning to continue searching for Sawyer Sipola. It was slightly overcast and a Coast Guard helicopter whirred overhead. A steady stream of volunteers wearing backpacks and hiking boots showed up to help. Paul Dunn and his wife Stacy just moved to Kodiak. They greeted newcomers at the firehouse and directed them to a check-in table inside.
Our church actually let out early today so we could come volunteer down here.
Sipola went missing near his home off Three Sisters Way in a heavily wooded part of the island on Saturday afternoon. He's 7 years old and autistic. Volunteer searchers were told he responds to the name Brigadier, or vocal howling. He also answers to the phrase, come on in. At the fire department, new arrivals were assigned to a search team before heading out into the field. For some, like Kodiak resident Jinky Christicue, Sunday was their second day searching, and it was more coordinated than the day before.
Yesterday when we went out, you know, there was a lot of, you know, individual teams, like two people, three people here and there, single people just looking.
Alaska State Troopers are in charge of the ongoing search. In an email, Troopers Public Information Officer Tim Despain wrote that nearly 1,000 volunteers have been looking for Sipola since he was reported missing. That includes local pilots, ground searchers, and horseback teams. The search also includes various members of local law enforcement, Kodiak Island Search and Rescue, Coast Guard Base Kodiak, and U.S. Navy SEALs. And by Saturday night, K-9 teams had arrived from Anchorage and Matsu. A number of families, including children, joined the group of searchers waiting to be deployed on Sunday morning. It was Mother's Day. That was on Christicue's mind as she waited to head out into the field.
We just want to find him. Yeah, well, and, you know, I have a 7-year-old, too, so.
Volunteers can report to the Bayside Volunteer Fire Department to join the search. Meanwhile, homeowners in the area where Sipola disappeared are encouraged to check any potential hiding spots on their properties for the little boy. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobrath.
The Alaska Democratic Party is very publicly cutting ties with independent candidate Al Gross. Gross is an orthopedic surgeon who is running for U.S. House. In a Facebook post today, the party called Gross a, quote, proven loser who doesn't share Democratic values but has the audacity to, quote, beg for your money. 2 years ago, the party endorsed Gross in his run for U.S. Senate. That time, Gross raised a record $19 million and lost to Republican Dan Sullivan by almost 13 percentage points. What set the Democrats off was an interview Gross gave to the Anchorage Daily News last week in which he suggested he might caucus with whichever party is in the majority. Democratic Party Executive Director Lindsey Kavanaugh says delegates at the party convention in Seward this weekend were appalled.
We'd sort of been sitting back saying, can we have a good, safe partnership with this person? And he's, you know, made it absolutely clear that he is not a Democrat and that he's not going to caucus with the Democrats, or, you know, doesn't know at this particular point in time and doesn't see value in the people that donated to his campaign and worked for him last cycle.
The Gross campaign issued a statement saying political parties don't deliver for Alaska and he won't be tied to one party. Gross, through a campaign consultant, declined an interview request. On Friday, three Alaska Native candidates running in the special primary election for Alaska's U.S. House seat went to Bethel for a candidate forum. Attendees brought up three main issues important to them: abortion access, salmon conservation, and public safety. KYUK's Olivia Eberts reports.
Four of the candidates running in the special election were slated to attend the candidate forum: Emil Nadi, Mary Peltola, Tara Sweeney, and Sarah Palin. Mary Peltola served as a legislator for the Bethel region for a decade. Most recently, she served as the executive director of the Kuskokwim Intertribal Fish Commission. She's a Democrat. Emil Nadi is Athabascan from Koyukuk. Nadi's best known for being AFN's first president and helping to author the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. He's a Democrat. Sweeney is a Inupiat from Utqiagvik and a Republican. She's served as the Assistant Secretary of Indian Affairs during the Trump administration. But Bethel resident Trim Nick did not attend the forum to see these three candidates.
I came to see Sarah.
But Palin didn't show. Heavy fog delayed Sweeney and Palin's flight by hours. In the interim, Palin canceled her ticket and wasn't able to get a new one. That's according to event organizer and moderator Anna Hoffman, president and CEO of Bethel Native Corporation. Hoffman asked the candidates about their stance on overturning Roe v. Wade and allowing individual states to legislate abortion access. Mary Peltola and Tara Sweeney both said they're pro-choice. Peltola said she would work to defend Roe v. Wade. Sweeney added that she does not support government funding for abortion. Emil Nadi said he believes in states' rights, which would mean overturning Roe v. Wade. But he said the choice should remain legal at the state level.
And as far as abortion goes, I think that's a three-way decision. It's between the woman and her doctor, and between the woman and God.
Multiple people who attended the forum said abortion was the most important issue for them this election cycle. Here's Bethel resident Victoria Sosa.
I wanted to ask what they will do about this Roe v. Wade, because it's really scary. It's really alarming. And it definitely puts the safety of Indigenous women in the ring.
Other attendees said salmon conservation was their main issue. 23-year-old Javen Williams was helping out at the event. He said there was another issue that was more important to him.
I really think public safety is the main issue.
Here's candidate Mary Peltola on that topic.
Public safety is intertwined with so many other issues. A lot of people remain in dangerous households because of Alaska's chronic housing shortages. So among other things, I will seek opportunities to increase our housing supply and make housing genuinely accessible.
Later on, a question came up about Alaska's role in national security. Peltola supports an increased military personnel presence in rural Alaska. She said that could aid in local public safety as well, with military officers acting as first responders in emergencies like floods or fires. Candidate Tara Sweeney didn't speak to how she would improve public safety in rural Alaska, but she did speak to national security.
It's about securing our borders and ensuring that we continue to provide the necessary services to the rest of the country through our natural resource development.
At the end of the event, Sweeney's campaign handed out bags of muktuk from Utqiagvik. But Mary Peltola, the local candidate, seemed to have the hometown advantage. Many constituents said that they were voting for her, including Bethel voter Madison Glore. She just turned 18 and is voting for the first time in the special primary election.
I knew her personally, and I know her goals as a candidate, and I'm just excited to see where she takes it. I know a little bit about her. I know what she wants. She is also Alaska Native, so that's pretty exciting.
If one of the four Alaska Native candidates running in the special election wins, they would be the first ever Alaska Native elected to the U.S. Congress. In Bethel, I'm Olivia Eberts.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Alaska State Library Talking Book Center has audiobooks and more for children and adults who are unable to read standard print. Learn more at talkingbooks.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Library Network.
Alaska's unique approach to mental health funding is improving the lives of Alaskans who experience behavioral health conditions and developmental disabilities. The Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority has a responsibility to generate revenue from its 1 million acres of land and the resources they contain. The trust uses this revenue to help fund statewide programs and initiatives that positively impact trust beneficiaries. To learn more, visit alaskamentalhealthtrust.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust.
More than $130 million in federal relief money is heading to Alaska communities impacted by more than a dozen fishery disasters between 2018 and 2021. That's according to an announcement on Thursday from Alaska's Department of Fish and Game. The funds were approved by Congress and allocated by the U.S. Department of Commerce. But that is a fraction of the money lost by the state's fishing communities. Carla Bush is a program manager with Fish and Game.
You know, across the board here, it looks like compared to the estimated losses from these disasters, the funding that was provided makes up about 60 to 70% of those losses.
14 fisheries in Alaska were approved as disasters by the U.S. Secretary of Commerce back in January. Those included salmon fisheries from the Yukon River to Prince William Sound and the Eastern Bering Sea tanner crab fishery. The Gulf of Alaska's 2020 cod fishery also received a disaster designation. That was the year most of the fishery disasters occurred. The 2019 Alaska Norton Sound king crab fishery will also receive relief money. It was approved as a disaster by the Commerce Secretary last summer. Fish and Game will hold a listening session on Wednesday for public input on how the latest disaster money should be spent. More information about call-in times is available at the department's website. Members of the public can also email comments to the Department of Fish and Game. Bush says the department hopes to publish a preliminary spending plan for the money next month. Mental health advocates in Ketchikan are calling for local, state, and federal officials to do more to address a surge in drug overdose deaths. Preliminary data show that drug-related deaths in Southeast more than tripled in 2021 from the year before. Deborah Asper works for the Ketchikan Wellness Coalition. She says one part of the issue is the rise of strong synthetic opioids.
That's really what's kind of tearing through Ketchikan right now, is like this fentanyl craze.
Opioids were involved in more than 75% of the region's overdose deaths, and fentanyl played a role in nearly half. Statewide, officials say nearly 60% of fatal drug overdoses involved fentanyl. Governor Mike Dunleavy recently called on the state legislature to increase penalties for drug dealers. Asper says she'd also like to see the state expand drug treatment programs within its jails and prisons.
We have all of these people right where we want them. Like we're telling, we want people in treatment. We want people to be in all these places. How do we get people to go to treatment? Well, we have all these people in one area, but we're choosing not to do anything with them.
A spokesperson for the State Department of Corrections says some state prisons and jails do offer inpatient and outpatient treatment programs, but state-run correctional institutions in Ketchikan, Juneau, and much of rural Alaska don't offer the same services. ASPR is also pushing for Congress to expand access to non-opioid painkillers with the No Pain Act. She says that would offer one more way to prevent addiction or relapse. Senators Lisa Murkowski and Dan Sullivan signed on as co-sponsors of the legislation last week. Advocates for missing and murdered Indigenous people gathered in Juneau last week. Alaska's newly appointed lead investigator for the state's Missing and Murdered Indigenous Persons Initiative spoke to the crowd. KTOO's Yvonne Crumry reports.
On Thursday, hundreds of advocates for missing and murdered Indigenous people gathered in front of the Capitol in Juneau. Most of them are wearing red. That's the color of the movement to remember murdered and missing loved ones. And to bring awareness to the violence that Native people are 10 times more likely to experience than the rest of the population. Drummers and dancers performed the Women's Warrior Song, with members of the crowd joining in. It's Ann Sears' first awareness event since starting her new job. Sears was the first Alaska Native woman to serve as a state trooper. In April, she was appointed to a statewide leadership position, tasked with investigating unsolved homicide and missing persons cases involving Alaska Native people.
I have felt like everything that I have done in my life, the 30 years of public service, my time as a state trooper, my growing up in Alaska, being the daughter of an Indigenous woman, has all led to this moment.
There are a number of unsolved missing persons cases in Juneau. Sears says in talking with local law enforcement, Tracy Day's name keeps coming up. Day is a Tlingit woman who went missing in Juneau in February of 2019. Her family and friends have used social media and community organizing to draw attention to her case. Sears says she wants to bring new eyes and strategies to the table in cases like Day's. Events like this march are important to give focus to cases and shed light on victims' stories. Sears says that she hopes people will continue to care about missing and murdered Indigenous people every day of the year. Hune Lance Twitchell, a language professor at the University of Alaska Southeast, wants violence against Alaska Native people to be a thing of the past.
We will look after each other. We will have a culture where it's safe to walk at any time, at any place.
Twitchell says that making a change won't be passive or easy.
But to make a new day, you have to make a bold move. That means naming what has happened.
The group marched to Elizabeth Paratrovich Hall, accompanied by drummers. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Eric Stone in Ketchikan, Lex Trinan in Anchorage, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Kirsten Dobroth in Kodiak, Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Olivia Eberts in Bethel, and Yvonne Crumry in Juneau. Our audio engineer is Tobin Shelby. Katie Anastas is our producer. And I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Princess Lodges, offering glass-domed railcar tours to Talkeetna and Denali National Park for Alaska summer adventures. Your journey begins at princesslodges.com. BIBEW is the union of skilled hands and generous hearts, hardworking people on the job and off. It's the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, the IBEW. This message sponsored by the IBEW Local 1547.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.